This is the Winchester Talking Newspaper for the week ending the 18th of August 2017. Hello and welcome to the Winchester and District Talking Newspaper with extracts from the Hampshire Chronicle for the week ending the 18th of August, which this week have been edited by Margaret Boyden and Linda Vincent. Your readers today are Barbara Cairns.
Hello.
Albie Minns.
Hello.
And Norma York.
Hello.
And I'm your presenter, Keith Vincent. The main headlines this week: Station Scheme Dogged by Secrecy. Fest stages comeback after queues, mud and mud mar start, and anger at potty safety rules. So, Barbara, may we have the story behind the first headline, please?
Station scheme is dogged by secrecy. A new architect has been appointed to a major Winchester scheme. The multi-million pound station approach project has moved a step closer following Cabinet approval of a design team who are due to begin work in September. But the name of the successful firm is being kept under wraps by civic chiefs in preparation for an announcement later in the month. Last year, the controversial plan to build offices and homes near the rail station collapsed when city councillors threw out plans submitted by an architect which had won a design competition. But in January, the council earmarked £150 million for the development, which aims to provide Grade A office space. A city council spokeswoman said, "The contract will be concluded after an official 10-day standstill period without challenge. The selected firm will scope the mix and balance of different uses across the Carfax and Cartle Market sites as an initial task. Notification of the council's decision will be sent to all tenderers, triggering the start of the official standstill period before the contract can be entered into. At the end of the standstill period, the name of the successful architecture firm will be made public. The procurement exercise by the Royal Institute of British Architects, REBA, saw 14 architects complete questionnaires and 5 progressed on to the next stage. Sarah Williams, REBA advisor, told Cabinet that there had been a good list of candidates. But a number of concerns were raised at the meeting about the scheme's progress. Patrick Davis of the City of Winchester Trust said, "It is not clear to me what documents are available to the public to be able to make a rational decision about what is happening. We do need all that information. I think we ought to be able to see it." The council's chief executive, Laura Taylor, replied that the information would be refreshed on the council's website in due course. Councillor Ian Tate asked what would be done differently to the previous scheme, adding that there was a lack of public confidence in the process. Ms. Williams replied that there would be more flexibility, that it would take into consideration the other major developments in the city, like Silver Hill, and that parking would be a major point since the last competition. Councillor Rob Humby, portfolio holder for business, added that the transport movement study being carried out between Hampshire County Council and the City Council would be incorporated into station approach, but that they were gathering data at present. Councillor Liz Hutchinson said, "There are a number of concerns that have been raised about office accommodation in Winchester. To make a project like this work, there must be a good design team, a good client, and a good brief. If we don't have those three, we won't succeed."
Fest stages comeback after queues and mud mar start. Thousands of revellers packed the Boomtown Fair for the action-packed three-day festival. It started on Thursday with queuing chaos in muddy conditions. Some festival goers reported people were fainting in the dew to... Sorry, that doesn't read right. I'll start again. Some festival goers reported people were fainting with dehydration as they waited to enter the site. The organisers say many revellers have forgiven them for the torrid start to the event by the time it finished on Sunday. However, organisers of the 60,000 capacity event at the Matterley Bowl near Winchester say once underway it was a huge success. Boomtown has marred with controversy over drugs and has had a number of deaths over the years. Last year, 18-year-old Olivia Christopher was found unresponsive in a tent having consumed a cocktail of drugs. A Boomtown spokeswoman said that one of the biggest successes of 2017 was the new drug testing facility at the festival. The spokeswoman said, "We had about 1,200 people over the 3 days that were here, and the way that we worked together was really good. We got the message out and warned people about substances that could cause harm. It feels like we made a big step in raising awareness and helping to educate people." The spokeswoman added that the question of queues would be addressed for future festivals. She added, "I think the general experience we had, a lot of people saying, 'Boomtown, we forgive you,' and I think the majority of people here had a really good time." Winchester City Council said they had only 3 noise complaints this year. Police were unable to provide details of arrests and drugs seized before the Chronicle went to press. And there are numerous photographs of people variously dressed, some as frontier people, some as Mexicans, some as Indians, and they all seem to be having a wonderful time. There's even a group with a family there as well. And overall, mud.
Anger at potty safety rules. Residents in a sheltered housing block in Winchester are angry that the council could take away plants and other items in communal areas. Elderly residents at Hyde Lodge say that Winchester City Council's plans are health and safety gone mad. Raymond Hiscott, 74, says his much-loved plants in the communal garden outside his flat are at risk. He says that residents feel they were not consulted about the plans, which also call for the removal of doormats, hooks from doors, and pot plants on windowsills. "They think we are stupid and we can't look after ourselves," he said. "We want to know why they seem to be targeting the elderly. Why can't they leave us to lead our lives the way we want to? I think it is health and safety gone mad." Another resident, Peter Hargraves, 81, said, "I just can't see the real purpose of it. I thought they would go out of their way to encourage residents to make places nice to live in. As for the pots here, I can't see how they could cause an accident." In a letter sent to tenants by Winchester City Council, it stated that there is difficulty using communal gardens and paths at older person accommodation sites in the district because of the large number of pots and the garden ornaments placed by tenants. The letter stated, "The communal gardens are for all residents to enjoy unobstructed. Whilst we see the benefits of tenants having a few pots along the edge of the building or in a shrub bed, they should not be excessive in number. Tenants are required to ask permission for any improvements, including placing pots in the communal gardens under their tenancy agreement." The letter goes on to state that pots and ornaments are a potential trip hazard and may reduce access for both residents and emergency services. A spokesperson for Winchester City Council said, "It is important that communal gardens are well maintained and safe for everyone to use. There have been a few incidents recently where plant pots obstructing footways have resulted in accidents and others have blocked access for grass cutters. We are simply asking residents to be considerate of others and to let us know when they wish to help improve the areas outside their flats." And there's a photograph of Peter Hargraves and Raymond Hiskett looking very disgruntled.
Thank you. That concludes the headlines. Now we continue with the death announcements, followed by Christian comment, letters, historical items, Chronicle comment, first person and Belgarum. So we start with the death announcements. Bathurst, Rita Betty Bathurst, who died at Tegfield Care Home aged 86. Cutts, David Albert Cutts, died on the 12th of August at the Royal Hampshire County Hospital, aged 86. Drew, John Russell Drew, is a veterinary surgeon who died on the 4th of August. Feltham, Raymond Eric Feltham, who died on the 10th of August, aged 74. Ingledow, John Wynne Ingledow, died peacefully at home on the 3rd of August, aged 90. Jackson, Peter Frederick Jackson, died peacefully at home on the 7th of August. Moffat, Reg Moffat, died in hospital on the 7th of August, aged 89. Randall, Trevor Charles Randall, died suddenly at home on the 2nd of August, aged 79. And Simpson, Jean Simpson, died peacefully at Westacre Nursing Home, aged 79. And now we move on to Christian comment, read by Albie.
Christian comment. We're all running a much bigger race. With the extensive television coverage, it would have been difficult not to have seen some of the World Athletic Championships, which concluded last Sunday. We will all have marvelled not only at the performances this past week, but also the revelation of the cost to the competitor, the agony during and after the event, the early rising, daily routines, the pain of training, the self-discipline. In ancient times, the victors would have received a crown of olive or laurel leaves in recognition of their efforts rather than medals. It might seem ridiculous to us now that after all the blood, sweat and tears of training and the effort of competing, the prize at those ancient games should be a crown of leaves. When Jesus called his first disciples, they discovered that discipleship involved discipline. The standard Christ set was high, daunting many a would-be follower. When he challenged them, they responded. They glimpsed in his life a goal worth every sacrifice they might be called to make. Perhaps they did not realize all that was involved in the call to carry a cross. But after the triumph of Calvary, they were inspired. St. Paul, writing to the early church at Corinth, likened Christian discipleship to a race. He reminded them that everyone who competes in the games goes into strict training, but only one can win the prize. They do it to win a fading garland. We, to win a garland that never fades. This is the reward that Jesus has in store for not only for those who finish first, but for everyone who crosses the finish line faithfully, an eternal crown that will never lose its value or its glory. And that comment comes from the Reverend David Williams of Romsey Abbey, and it's accompanied by a photograph of seven men crossing the finish line, all with smiles on their faces.
Thank you, Albie. Next, we have letters to the editor, and Barbara, I think you've got the first.
Centre Cash Drain. This is from Martin Wilson of the Square in Winchester. Sir, there are many serious unanswered questions about the financial and contractual position of River Park Leisure Centre and how a contractor has been allowed to run a council facility into the ground whilst profiting massively. Chronicle letters, July the 27th and August 10. The amount of expenditure that has been spent by the council on the River Park Leisure Centre facility over a 10-year period is £13 million. It has never been satisfactorily explained by the council why or on what. It has also not been explained why the council has never received their 10% share of income over the many years of the contract. There has never been a full and satisfactory financial audit of the income generated by the contractor. A contractor has been given the opportunity to run a uniquely profitable facility for what will amount to a total of 32 years and has left a facility not fit for purpose. Despite the condition of the facility, never once have officers at the council issued any notices of dilapidation or rectification to the contractor. The contractor, previously DC Leisure, now Places for People, but of course the same company, has a contractual responsibility for all repairs, maintenance and redecoration of the interior of the centre, plus plant and equipment maintenance and making good all damage. At the very least, it is arguable that the contractor should pay for a large proportion of the work needed to make the centre fit for purpose. Martin Wilson, The Square, Winchester.
Sporting Chance. Sir, it is clear from the letters in the recent chronicles that support for the new leisure centre at Bar End is far from overwhelming, and the inherent drawbacks of the proposal have not been addressed. A centre at Bar End will be difficult and more costly for the city's residents to visit and add to traffic congestion in the city centre. The out-of-town location will bring little trade to the city, and there is the vexed question of what to do with River Park, a site eminently suited for use as a leisure centre, but now offering the City Council another opportunity for some overblown development. The Bar End proposal is well suited to a Hampshire County facility for elite sport, but not a sport for all centre for the health and pleasure of the Winchester residents. The council needs to demonstrate that the new centre really is for Winchester. It could do this by arranging a residence membership scheme in the same way as residence parking permits are issued, allowing residents to use the facility at highly preferential rates. It could also make till receipts from the new centre. And that's from Richard Evans of Fordington Avenue in Winchester.
Now a letter from Anne and Richard Quick, Oliver's Battery Road South, Winchester, under the heading Rent Rethink. Sir, congratulations to Natalie Shaw on her letter, Review Rents, August 3rd. We totally agree with her despair over the decline of the centre of Winchester, due largely to the ever-increasing rise in rents, driving out the good quality shops and replacing them with more eating establishments. When we came to Winchester over 50 years ago, taking visitors around this beautiful city was a pleasure, but this is no longer the case. For most of the time, the High Street is now dominated by market stalls, destroying the beautiful vista from the West Gate to King Alfred, as well as making it almost impossible to stop and enjoy the remaining shop displays. Winchester was once the ancient capital of England. Before it is too late, please, please, could the council stop and rethink its future strategy over the centre of the city? No more huge rent rises and no more eating establishments. Visitors come to Winchester mainly for the historical appeal and not as a gourmet experience, which only helped to fuel this country's rising obesity crisis. Sorry.
Keep Street Open, from Nigel Turnbull, Stockbridge Road. Sir, in response to a letter by Mrs. Crawley regarding the closure of Great Minster Street, Chronicle August 10th, Yet again, the residents are having to make their way, making an exclusive area of the city. She states that vehicles are using it illegally. As a Bintonian, I've never heard such rubbish. It has always been an access route for many who genuinely require it to shops and small businesses in that area. People like myself, who are local traders, often serving the very people who want it placed under some form of control. That old chestnut pollution is conveniently used as an argument. Sorry, but pollution is also moved by wind, so any created is not necessarily from passing cars. However, if Winchester City Council were to waste useful resources in pacifying the privileged few who live in that area, perhaps they will share the same for those who will reside at the new Barton Farm estate. The poor souls will need to endure all our current arterial traffic from Andover Road passing their door at 20 miles an hour. Nigel Turnbull, Stockbridge Road, Full Flood, Winchester.
And this is from Rupert Pitt. Sir, any government must provide these necessities, either privately or by taxation. Police, defence by armed forces, food, housing, education, health, transport and jobs. Britain does quite well in most of these, especially food, though there are bad schools and many are locked into unfulfilling jobs. In housing, it has been a complete disaster. There are not affordable homes to buy or rooms to rent in many cities, especially Winchester, Romsey and parts of Southampton, i.e. Highfield and Chilworth. There are many reasons for this, but one has been the ignorance of treating the housing market like any free market, i.e. wine, clothes or books, where supply can meet demand. The housing market is severely restricted in supplies by planning laws. You can buy wine where you like, but you cannot build a house where you like. Any application, even to extend a house, will have lawyers and council planners monitoring every step. Housing is given preferential treatment on tax as well. We pay tax on income, on dividends from investments and bonds, and if you hold shares, you also pay capital gains tax on the increase in the value of 18%. To quote William Hutton in The Observer in June 2016, for a start, we should not compound income inequality with unequal property taxation. It is absurd that council tax is based on 1991 property values, and the highest band means that only a handful of people pay more than £3,000 in the real terms, a fraction of what the rates yield in 1980s. The grotesque situation has arisen where someone on a medium income of £25,000 will pay £2,700 in income tax and £2,020.32 in national insurance contributions, total £4,720.32. You pay 18% of your income in tax. But just by sitting in a house whose value has increased, you do not pay tax unless it is a second home, where you pay CGT. The government has not revised property values since 1991, as they want house owners happy. This is cowardice. The solution, the Miralles Review, commissioned by the Institute of Fiscal Studies, advocates a new tax that would rise proportionally with the property values, and also the abolition of stamp duty, a tax on transactions. This would free up the market and yield billions more for local government. And that's from Rupert Pitt of Church Lane in Coldon Common.
And now a letter from Ira Parry Jones of Gordon Road, Winchester, under the heading, Hall is an undeveloped treasure. Sir, recently, I had the unexpected and rare privilege of exploring the interior of the Woolstaplers Hall, one of the few buildings within the Silver Hill Regeneration Project, which, I believe, is to be exempt from demolition. What a huge surprise I had on reaching the top, fourth floor. Up there, an enormous square space offers unique views of the city from all four sides. Views which are simply stunning. There, one is at eye level with the clock tower of the Guildhall and the details of its upper facade. And from the same spot, can look down on a jumble of medieval tiled roofs of the premises which currently front the Broadway. Nearby, the whole edifice of the cathedral provides a backdrop to all of this. Just by turning round, I had a panorama of St. Giles Hill in its leafy splendour, and in the foreground, the almshouses of St. John's North, with their fine, elegant chimneys. I could go on. This special space should surely be exploited. Could it not be transformed into a public viewing area, complete with cafe, restaurant, seating, etc.? The lower floors would still be available for conversion for the other important uses that have already been suggested. An Anglo-Saxon museum, a cultural or art centre. This wonderful location, right in the centre of Silver Hill, though largely unvisited at present, could and should be imaginatively transformed for the benefit of us all.
Thank you. From the letters, we move back in time 200 years ago, Barbara.
And this is from 200 years ago, from the Chronicle of in August 1817. On Thursday evening, as Mr. Penny of Park Street, accompanied by Mr. Brigstock, were returning in a gig to Bristol through Ashton, they were stopped by a footpad who demanded their money and watches. Mr. Penny gave the footpad 5 shillings, telling him it was all that he deserved. The fellow then went round to the other side of the gig and demanded Mr. Brigstock's purse, which he gave to him, but it contained only 6 pence. He then demanded Mr. Brigstock's pocketbook, which he told him he did not carry. Returning again to Mr. Penny, he said he was not satisfied, but he must deliver his pocketbook. This Mr. Penny refused and struck at the fellow with a stick, which unfortunately missed him. The footpad then presented a pistol and threatened to fire it. But Mr. Penny began to argue the matter with him, and seeing Mr. Penny and his friend determined to defend himself, the fellow walked off coolly, calling them illiberal, stingy fellows.
And 100 years ago, Saturday, August the 18th, 1917... Another blow was delivered by the British Army yesterday against the Germans in the west. It covered the front southeast and east of Ypres with the Glencorse Wood, as far north as Langemarck itself, was captured, and by noon 1,200 prisoners and 5 guns had been captured. The night communique supplements this information. Beyond Langemarck, British troops are established 1/2 mile east of the village, their final objective for the day. On the right, fierce and determined fighting. The British troops have been pressed back from part of the ground won earlier in the day. Further German counterattacks during the evening were broken up. The number of prisoners was ascertained so far as 1,800, and a few guns have been taken. On the Lens fighting on Wednesday, the enemy lost 896 prisoners and 16 aeroplanes, while 3 British machines were missing. And the second one is a report. A report was presented by His Grace the Duke of Wellington, KG, who remarked that the council would notice that the committee had thought it necessary to raise the war bonus of the police up to 15 shillings weekly. This was a very considerable rise, but the war bonus to the police has not risen compared with other war bonuses. The reason for extra war bonus was the increased cost of living that applied to the police, and there was no only there was not only the increased cost of living, but they had been called upon to perform enormously increased duties during the war. They had also lost 25% of their strength, so that in reality the country was getting the same duties done with a force only three-quarters its normal strength, and a great deal of extra duties beside. The committee, after careful consideration of the whole question, had decided that the bonus should be increased to 15 shillings.
And 50 years ago, Saturday, August 19th, 1967. Two appeals for building permission have been dismissed by the Minister of Housing and Local Government. At Winchester, on June 23rd, Messrs. Smith, Yates and Drew appealed against the refusal of the Winchester Rural District Council to allow development of land fronting Nations Hill, Kingsworthy. This envisaged the construction of an estate road and housing at a density of approximately 5 to 1 acre on the 21 acres of land. An amended application was also submitted, applying for 2 bungalows, amendment of access, together with ancillary works. The inspector, Mr. K. Mortimer Hart, came to the conclusion that while both the appeal sites were appropriate for development, it would be premature for consent to be granted at the present time. Pending the detailed consideration of future development of the whole village, he felt it would be unwise for any commitments to be entered into in respect of the sites.
And from 25 years ago, Friday, August the 21st, 1992, there are two items. The first, a Victorian mansion, which is soon to be demolished as part of the M3 project, attracted 700 visitors when resident artists staged an exhibition of their work at the weekend. 5 local artists have used the Knoll in Station Hill at Shawford as art studios over the past 5 years. The house, once the pride of the Shawford estate, which was built in the 1880s, was bought by Hampshire County Council in the late 70s in preparation for the motorway extension. Due to inquiries and public controversy, the artists' stay was longer than anticipated, but they now accept that their treasured studios will be flattened by the bulldozers within 6 months. As a celebration of their work, they opened the studios to the public at the weekend. It was absolutely hectic, but lovely and very enjoyable, and around £5,000 was raised from the sales of artwork and commissions, said Pam Franklin. She specialises in hand-painted furniture and teaches adult education classes, often at the Knoll. And the second item, NALGO members at Hampshire's higher education colleges were due to take their first strike action as A-level results were published yesterday. The National One-Day Action Against Low Pay follows a ballot among 12,000 administrative and professional staff who voted against an offer of 4.3% from the employers' organisation, the Polytechnic and Colleges Employers Forum. The one-day strike would affect Winchester's 2 higher education colleges, King Alfred's and the Winchester School of Art. And now we move on to the Chronicle editorial comment. Barbara.
Editorial comment. Council must get it right this time. Winchester City Council simply can't afford for Station Approach to turn into an ongoing development saga like Silver Hill. The scheme was derailed last year when city councillors voted to start again from scratch. Now, with a new council leader, Caroline Horrell, at the helm, and a more united Conservative group behind her, this is the best chance for the scheme to finally take off. This week, a new architect was appointed to revive it, but the name of the firm is being kept under wraps. This time, with a procurement exercise by the Royal Institute of British Architects, REBA, it is hoped there will be no controversy. But there are still some major questions remaining over the brief. Last year, Richard Jobson and his firm Design Engine, based in Winchester, were shortlisted in a competition, and along with London firm Hopkins, submitted proposals which were unpopular with the public and rejected by city councillors. After the scheme collapsed, he blamed the council for a restrictive design brief which was too ambitious over both a profit return and the amount of housing, offices and parking. There is no doubt that the scheme is much needed, but the city council must avoid the mistakes of the past.
Thank you. And now we have First Person, read by Norma.
This was our JFK moment, by Joanna Lewis. August feels weird this year. It's always a tricky month. Dreams of climactic long hot summers usually get squashed inside a damp tent or by the feel of a wet shoe. The heating has gone on and the news is totally bonkers. We've been told that the next generation will be able to travel to outer space as a matter of routine. Many of us would be grateful to make it to Waterloo. And what about international diplomacy? It's like opening a copy of the Beano. Pre-August, I thought Guam was some kind of energy bar, not the home of a potential nuclear standoff between Johnny Fartpants and Buster Gonad. Thank goodness we can look to the certainty of history for some welcome distraction. This year's Hampshire Heritage Open Day weekend, September the 7th to 10th, will be an extravaganza. A record number of historic buildings in our City of Kings are sharing their secrets to the public. My eyes lit up when I read Gives and Hawkes, the posh tailors in the square, Winchester, are opening their archives. The company has dressed every British sovereign since George III, and its Winchester store is entwined with the county's military history. On show will be the fabulous Hampshire Regiment uniform made for its then Colonel-in-Chief, Princess Diana. Yet their beautiful but lifeless jacket is a sad reminder of the loss of the woman who filled it and the life of the nation, which such style, vivacity and compassion. The end of August will have a sad twist with the 20th anniversary of Diana's death, aged 36. It was our JFK moment. We remember where we were when we heard the news. I'm not an ardent royalist. The most I had in common with the late princess was that we both owned once a guinea pig. But the tragic news was so upsetting, continual and shocking. The horrific accident, the paparazzi taking photos as she lay dying, shouting at those there to help to get out of the way so they could do their job. The fact that she was conscious, policemen trying to keep her talking and stroking her cheek, a chauffeur nearly four times over the drink driving limit, the torment. If only she had worn a seatbelt, if only she had kept her British Royal Protection Officers. Millions of people across all ages, classes and ethnicities were inconsolable. Millions all over the world felt they had lost someone they knew. Continual media coverage of her every move since she married Prince Charles, aged 19, had much to do with this. And the person they knew was someone millions felt they had turned their unhappiness and hurt into a vocation for instinctively helping others. Queen of Hearts, Queen of Love, Queen of the World, you didn't need HRH to be royal, were recurring messages left outside the palace railings or in condolence books, plus there was a moral outcry. The mother of the future heir had been treated badly, a perception that a couldn't-care-less powerful family had inadvertently put her at the mercy of a careless one. The world's an uglier place, wrote Jeremy Clarkson at the time in The Sun, referring to her beauty, but the press was also full of personal testimonies from the public about her charitable work. She was particularly good at comforting the dying or parents struggling with a child bereavement. She would spend time listening, absorbing their anguish. She would often keep in touch by letter, telephone or visits. How Diana would have applauded the spirit of Claire Ward and Hayley Evans featured in last week's Chronicle, their money-raising efforts to help revamp a bereavement suite in the local maternity unit. Both families lost their little girls as they were born, a catastrophe event they have coped with, finding extra strength from helping others. Bereavement is the greatest human leveller, and grief the price we pay for love.
And now we move on to Belgarum. I think we've got some items from there, Albie.
Yes, Belgarum's alternative look at the news refers to three items this week. And the first is under the heading Return to Partition Roots. Two Winchester girls were the focus of a CBBC Newsround special documentary which looked at the 70th anniversary of the partition of India. Shrubha Shukla, age 11, and Kamal Priya Chakrabarti, 9, from Kingsworthy, who attend Western Primary School, were selected to be part of the documentary broadcast last week. The documentary marked the 70th anniversary of the partition of India in 1947 at the end of British rule. The programme looked at their family history as their parents' family had moved out of East Bengal before 1947 and got settled in the Indian part of Bengal state. East Bengal became part of East Pakistan and later became Bangladesh, and the documentary shows the girls, who have been born and brought up in the UK, discovering their family history and shows them visiting Bangladesh to see their old family home. In the programme, the girls travelled to Calcutta, in India, to meet their grandfather and describe to him their experience in Bangladesh. Their dad, Somu Chakrabarti, said, "They were very excited to be part of it and proud seeing it on the TV. It is very exciting and important for them. They did not know anything about the partition of India, and it is the first time they got to know about it." And there's a photograph of the two girls in India at the old family home taking a photograph of a stone monument in the garden. And the second item, under the heading Some Pause for Thought, pause spelt P-A-W-S, characters from hit children's TV show Paw Patrol are heading to a Winchester shopping centre. On August the 19th, shoppers are invited to come and see the puppies from the Nickelodeon show, including German Shepherd, Chase, and the brave Dalmatian puppy Marshall, who will be making personal appearances at intervals at the Brooks Shopping Centre throughout the day. Chase and Marshall will appear in their PAW patrol pen at 11 a.m, 12 p.m, 1 p.m, 2 p.m, and 3 p.m, and families are advised to arrive early, as the event is expected to be very popular. Plus, free face painting will be available for shoppers from 10 a.m. until 4 p.m. And there's a photograph of Chase and Marshall, in one of them, the Dalmatian, in a red fireman's outfit, and Chase in a blue policeman's outfit. Well, I think it's a policeman's outfit. And the third item, TV's Hugh to Host Quiz. A special edition of a famous quiz is being held in Winchester Guild Hall. Haven't the Foggiest, hosted by comedian Hugh Dennis, will take place on October the 11th as part of Breast Cancer Awareness Month, with proceeds going towards the Breast Cancer Haven, Wessex. If you book your team before August the 1st, you will be able to take advantage of the early bird discount and only pay £360 per table of 10. Tickets bought after that will cost £400 per table of 10. Both prices include two bottles of fizz and a hot supper. Tickets can be bought at breastcancerhaven.org.uk/event/haven'tthefoggiest2017. That's breastcancerhaven, all one word, lowercase, .org.uk/haven't/foggiest2017. The Breast Cancer Haven Wessex provides support for people diagnosed with the disease from their base in Titchfield. And there is another photograph, this time of Hugh Dennis, who has a rather vacant look. Perhaps he hasn't the foggiest.
OK, now we move on to this week's announcements, and we start with What's On. And on Tuesday the 22nd of August in Winchester Cathedral, there's a free lunchtime concert at 1 p.m. by soprano Nadine Benjamin. There's a retiring collection. On Wednesday the 23rd of August until Saturday the 26th of August at the Theatre Royal, 7:30 p.m, West Side Story. And if you want tickets or more information, the Theatre Royal box office is 01962 840 440. That's 01962 840 440. On Saturday the 26th of August at Badger Farm Community Centre between 2 and 4 p.m, Winchester Horticultural Society have their late summer show. On Sunday the 27th of August at Romsey Memorial Park at 3 p.m, the City of Southampton Albion Band will be giving an afternoon concert. That's Romsey Memorial Park at 3 p.m. And on the Bank Holiday Monday, the 28th of August, in Winchester Cathedral at 4 p.m, organist Christopher Herring will be giving a special bank holiday recital featuring Verdi, Mozart, etc. And tickets for that are £10 from the Cathedral box office. Now, lighting up time ends on Friday the 18th of August at 5:57 a.m. and begins at 8:19 p.m. And next Wednesday the 23rd of August, it ends at 6:05 a.m. and begins at 8:09 p.m. Now, if you know someone who is sight impaired and would like to receive our recordings, or if you have a problem with the recording you've received from us or your playback box, please telephone Irene Dowding on 01962 870 370. And with this week's recording, in the wallet you'll find a laminated card for you to retain, and that's got Irene's number on it in case you have a problem with either the recording or with your memory stick player. Because we realise if you can't hear the recording, you can't hear her telephone number. So that's for you to retain, and hopefully it'll help out. Now we continue with items of general news. Barbara.
Couple's new pet project. An independent family-run pet shop is to open in Winchester. Paul Connell and his wife Lynn are to open their business at 65B High Street with an opening date set for mid-September. The couple moved to Winchester from London 4 months ago, where Lynn ran a pet store for 16 years. The news will be welcomed by some residents worried about the number of chains moving into vacant city centre units. On Winchester High Street, Zoe Jewellers and Next have closed their doors, but at the same time, Turtle Bay is due to move in at the former Tony and Guy site, and TK Maxx are also set to open a new shop in the Brooks Shopping Centre. Lynn said, Our son went to the university here and decided to stay because it's such a nice city, and we've visited a lot over the years. Our daughter and her partner also live here. We're looking forward to it and hope people will be supportive. At our last shop, people were very loyal, and we hope to have that community feel here. I'm not too worried about pets at home, as it's different to what we do. And there's a photograph of Paul and Lynn Connell sitting there with three of their dogs, posing for the picture. That's all five of them.
Phone tax scam warning. People in Hampshire are being warned about the aggressive phone fraudsters claiming to be from the tax office, demanding sums of money. CPR Call Blocker, makers of a call blocking device, is urging people in the county to hang up if someone claiming to be from the tax office calls or leaves a message claiming that you must call back or risk face legal action. It follows reports of a similar scam in Australia, where scammers claiming to be from the Australian Tax Office, ATO, were calling people and demanding sums of money be paid or risk facing a warrant for their arrest. The scam that has been reported to CPR Call Blocker involves an automated message telling the recipient they owe tax and face legal action. They are then prompted to press a number to speak to someone to make a payment on their unpaid tax or face a lawsuit. Some calls have also told people to get in touch with a solicitor, as they would be facing serious legal problems if they don't pay immediately. Bryony Hipkin from the CPR Call Blocker said, "What we often see with phone scams is that they can quickly spread across the globe, as scammers see what's working well in other places. After the large sums of money that have been lost in Australia to the recent ATO scam, it isn't surprising to hear from our customers that a similar scam is now going the rounds over here, so it is sensible for people in Hampshire to be on their guard. So, to recap, if you have a demand on your phone from the tax office, hang up."
Ratty's making a comeback on the Meon. Ratty looks set to make a major return to a Hampshire river. Water voles were locally extinct in the Meon Valley, but they are now thought to be thriving following a 5-year project to reintroduce the animal, which inspired the character Ratty in The Wind in the Willows. The first 500 water voles were released at Titchfield Haven, managed by Hampshire County Council, in 2013. Now, 2,548 have been brought to the area at locations including Soberton, East Mirren and Meonstoke, in the biggest water vole release ever attempted in the country. Once a common sight in the Meon Valley, water voles became locally extinct in 2008 because of a loss of habitat, pollution, and being hunted by the non-native American mink. Ali Morse, wildlife ranger from Hampshire and Isle of Wight Wildlife Trust, said, "The water vole is a great way to get more people involved in caring for the river. Whether people remember seeing water voles here in the past or are new to the area, it means something to them to see them now. But this is about so much more than just one species. If you make the river better for water vole, all the other wildlife benefits." Derek Gow, whose business specialises in water vole ecology and who bred the animals released on the Meon, added, The River Meon water vole reintroduction has been an inspiring example of well-coordinated teamwork in action. Volunteers have ensured that this wonderful project now clearly illustrates that the restoration of this iconic species is working on a landscape scale. The project is a partnership between the South Downs National Park Authority, the Environment Agency, Natural England, the Hampshire and Isle of Wight Wildlife Trust, and Hampshire County Council. And there's a photograph of a water vole sitting amongst the reeds at the edge of the river. Doubtless it's Ratty himself, chewing on a green shoot from the reeds.
Two more chances to see Eel House. The Eel House on the River Arle has welcomed over 7,000 visitors since its restoration 8 years ago. The popular attraction has just two open days remaining this year, August the 28th and September the 10th. The Eel House Committee has applied for an educational licence so that schools can come and take part in trapping eels from next year. Chairman of the committee, David Woods, hopes to begin trapping eels for study in the near future. The popular attraction was originally built in the 1820s to trap mature eels as they migrated to their spawning grounds in the Bahamas. Visitors to the house will be able to see the ingenious grill system used to catch eels. There is also an exhibition detailing the restoration of the building and how it has been used to study the eel population and migratory patterns in modern times. And there's a picture of the eel house with its very smart new brickwork spanning the River Arle, with the water gushing down between three arches underneath the house. It does say that the Mayor of Winchester is opening the eel house, but I think he must be inside because there isn't any sign of him.
90-year-olds from the city have their say, and this is a preview of 4 Score and 10. Hat Fair and Flintlock Theatre announced the tour of their co-production 4 Score Years and 10, a play originally commissioned by Winchester City Council that explores what it's like to be an older person in contemporary Britain. With support from the Arts Council England and the Baring Foundation Celebrating Age Fund, 4 Score Years and 10 will tour to arts venues and village halls around Hampshire and Northamptonshire from September the 13th. 4 Score Years and 10 was constructed in 2016 from the words of Winchester's 90-year-old residents. With the help of local charities, 57 residents came forward to contribute to the show, from which 6 participants were chosen and interviewed one-to-one. Transcripts from the 6 interviews were then used by Flintlock Theatre to create the piece of verbatim theatre, where the audience are invited to take tea alongside partygoers with 9 decades to share. Anne Glynn, co-director of Flintlock Theatre, said, "The participants have been absolutely central to the project that explores what it is to be an older person in the UK today, and that pushes audiences to listen to them with fresh ears. The project has been humbling, inspiring, and just enormous fun. We're so looking forward to bringing the show to a wider audience." Phyllis, aged 93, one of the original participants whose story is told in 4 Score Years and 10, reacted to the news of the new tour. "I can't tell you how thrilled I am. Getting people together through the local communities is really important. I sat there and heard my past afresh. It was a wonderful experience." Tickets are free, although booking is essential. Tickets include tea and cake. Full tour details can be found at hatfair.co.uk. That's hatfair, all lowercase, .co.uk. 4 Score Years and 10 is touring from September the 13th to October the 1st, and there is a picture of a smiling Phyllis.
New golf store tees off at cricket stadium. American Golf is bringing the biggest brands in golf to Hampshire with the opening of its latest store. Its new store, based at the Aegis Bowl, is the result of an investment of more than £120,000 and has created 5 new jobs. Cam Burke, head of property at American Golf, said, "The venue at Aegis Bowl provides us with a unique opportunity to be at the heart of a leisure experience of the highest quality. We have a Hilton Hotel, Hampshire County Cricket, and the brand new Boundary Lakes Golf Course all on site, which positions us perfectly for both the local golfing community and anyone who is visiting the area to experience the activities on offer. We are exceptionally proud of what we've achieved with this partnership and are delighted to make the investment into the venue and the people of Southampton." The shop next door to the Hilton offers free PGA professional advice, free custom fitting, price match guarantee, trade in on used clubs, and a try before you buy service on all clubs. In the pipeline for September is the launch of a fitting studio. New store manager David Miles said, "The Aegis Bowl is a fantastic venue for us to help Southampton's golfers get the very best out of their game. It's our first venture in partnership with Hilton, so we're determined to get it just right. The team we've put together is full of enthusiasm, and with the large investment American Golf has made, the facilities really are second to none. We cater for every level of golfer, and with access to the best equipment and the latest club fitting technology, the future for the region's golfers is very bright. The Aegis Bowl is the company's 116th outlet." And there's a photograph of store manager David Miles with staff members James Petrie and Charles Bradley proudly standing on the grass area outside the American Golf premises next door to the Hilton Hotel.
Broadchurch Stars at Cathedral event. Broadchurch Stars will be among the celebrities at a special charity celebration in Hampshire. David Tennant and Olivia Colman, who played D.I. Alec Hardy and D.S. Ellie Miller in the hit ITV crime drama, will take part in the event at Winchester Cathedral on December the 7th. The event is in aid of Breast Cancer Haven in Titchfield and the Murray Parish Trust. Other high-profile personalities from the world of TV and film who will take part include Downton Abbey star Hugh Bonneville and actor Timothy West, CBE. There will also be a performance by renowned soprano Claire Rutter, along with festive performances by a variety of Hampshire musical groups, including Winchester Cathedral Girl Choristers. BBC South Today presenter and chair of the Breast Cancer Haven Development Board, Sally Taylor, said, "Once again, we are extremely grateful for this generous support from our high-profile friends. We are delighted to be working closely with the Murray Parish Trust to deliver something very special for Winchester Cathedral this year." Actress and co-founder of the Murray Parish Trust, Sarah Parish, said, "We are so lucky to have such big names supporting this event, and we will be doing everything we can to ensure that this will be a night to remember, to raise as much funds as possible for these two incredible local charities." From September, 600 tickets will be available. To register your interest, or if you would like to be involved with or support the event in any way, contact Sam Robson on sam@themurrayparishtrust.com.
That's Sam at the Murray Parish Trust, themurrayparishtrust, all one word, .com. And the article is illustrated with a photo of Olivia Coleman in her trademark orange anorak and David Tennant looking bearded and grumpy from as their parts in Broadchurch.
Heart charity boss admits to 440k fraud. A finance boss has admitted abusing his position at a hospital charity. As previously reported, Ronald Chigungwe had been charged with a raft of offences after nearly £450,000 in cash was stolen from his employer. Ronald Chigungwe has now pleaded guilty to four counts in relation to his position at much-loved charity Wessex Heartbeat, which provides support to the babies, children and adults and their loved ones treated at the Wessex Cardiac Centre at Southampton General Hospital. The 40-year-old appeared at Southampton Crown Court yesterday and admitted two counts of fraud by abuse of position and two counts of converting criminal property. He is due to be sentenced in November. Chigungwe denied four other counts of converting criminal property, and the Crown Prosecution Service will now decide whether he should face trial. More than £440,000 cash was stolen from Wessex Heartbeat over several years. Basingstoke resident Chigungwe worked as a financial controller for the charity, which is celebrating its 25th anniversary this year, and left it in 2015. John Munro, chief executive of Wessex Heartbeat, previously told the Daily Echo the charity would issue a full statement at the end of the legal proceedings. Wessex Heartbeat began fundraising for the Wessex Cardiac Centre in Southampton General Hospital in 1992 and has since raised £15.8 million to provide cutting-edge equipment, clinical education and research. It helps 20,000 patients a year. The Daily Echo reported earlier this summer that it's investing £200,000 in a programme which will give Southampton youngsters the opportunity to learn about science and lead a healthier life. Mr Munro announced plans to provide funding for the Life Lab programme, a state-of-the-art teaching laboratory.
End in sight for M27 bottleneck. A £20 million scheme to improve a notorious bottleneck on the M27 has been given the green light. Highways England has announced the go-ahead for the upgrade of Junction 9 near Fareham in a bid to curb congestion. The new layout will include additional lanes on both slip roads and on the northern and southern sections of the junction's roundabout to increase capacity. Cash for the project has come from the government's £100 million Growth and Housing Fund, which provides money for road improvements needed to support new developments. Roads in the Whitley Estate, Rookery Avenue and Parkway will also be widened with an additional £15 million of funding from the Solent Local Enterprise Partnership, LEP. Both of the schemes will be delivered by Hampshire County Council. Councillor Rob Humby, Hampshire County Council's transport portfolio holder, said, "Whitley is an extremely important business hub for the South, and this project will give existing businesses the confidence to invest as well as unlock new economic development potential in the area." Highways England Chief Executive Jim O'Sullivan said, England's strategic roads are vital for economic success, connecting businesses, people, and supporting the government's agenda of employment and growth. George Hollingberry, MP for Meon Valley, said, "The government promised this substantial infrastructure investment and has now delivered it, meaning the easing of congestion at this junction for thousands of motorists using the M27 and for Whiteley residents and businesses who have had to put up with traffic problems at this bottleneck for many years." Councillor Sean Woodward, leader of Fareham Borough Council, said, "This infrastructure is critical to help safeguard and create more jobs and to provide much-needed new homes for Fareham people." He said the motorway improvements would help bring forward the 3,500-home North Whiteley development, which is now expected to go ahead within the next few months. North Whiteley was put on hold until adequate funding to enhance road operations was in place. Winchester City Council confirmed the legal agreement to commence work on the development was close to being signed. Work on the scheme is expected to start within 3 years.
Have your say on council budget. Residents still have time to respond to Hampshire County Council's survey asking people for their views on options for managing a shortfall in the money needed to balance the budget. By 2019/20, the authority is expecting to face a gap of £140 million as a result of ongoing national austerity measures, changes in demand for some services and inflationary pressures. Council leader Roy Perry said, "The picture is worsened by the fact that central government revenue support grant funding for Hampshire will cease altogether in 2019/20, but demand for county council services continues to rise. The consultation asks residents and stakeholders to give us their views on a number of high-level strategic options, including potential changes to services, further ways to generate income, use of reserves, potential increases to council tax, and changing local government." The consultation closes at 11:59 p.m. on August the 21st. The survey can be completed online. Paper copies may be requested by emailing Insight, that's INSIGHT, at hants.gov.uk, and are also available from libraries.
Public locked out of pavilion event. Residents were locked out of a sports pavilion consultation after a council gave up on the session. The public event about a scheme to revamp Hiltonbury Pavilion was supposed to run until 8 p.m. at Velmore Community Centre in Chandler's Ford. But when resident Louisa Dixon turned up to have her say shortly after 7:30 p.m, she found a locked door. The parish council admitted it ended the consultation early due to lack of interest. Proposed improvements include a new sports hall and the refurbishment of an existing pavilion and removal and replacement of a first floor with a fitness room and two concession rooms, plus a 40-space temporary car park at the Ashdown Road. The scheme to revamp the building, owned by Chandler's Ford Parish Council, has sparked a heated debate among residents who have raised concerns over cost and parking. Louisa, a family mediator from Chandler's Ford, says she feels let down by the council over the consultation held on July the 26th. She said, "I finished work at 7:30 and rushed around to voice my opinion only to find the door locked and a handwritten note stuck on the window. I was really, really angry. It's just an example of not caring what we think. I wanted to ask questions because this doesn't seem a project thought through. Duncan Murray, Parish Council Clerk, confirmed the consultation was concluded earlier as nobody turned up, and he said he left the community centre at 7:25pm. He added, "I can confirm that nobody did turn up at 7pm or before I pulled out of the car park. A note was left inviting residents to come to the Fryan Pavilion consultation, and there's a picture of Hiltingbury Pavilion in Chandler's Ford, and it is rather dilapidated."
Successful vet John dies after long illness. A well-known Winchester vet who built up a thriving practice in the city and surrounding areas has died. John Russell Drew established a surgery on Eastgate Street, as well as branches in Overton, Oakley, and an evening surgery from his family home in Preston Candover. He died after a long illness, which his family say he bore with great courage and good humour. John's love of animals and compassionate nature led him to want to be a vet from a young age. He graduated from the Royal Veterinary College, London, in 1968. He joined a large mixed practice in Reading as an assistant, spending most of his time working with horses. After 2 years, he moved to a practice in Basingstoke, where he developed his expertise in farm animals and small animal surgery. In 1977, he purchased an old public house, the Mildmay Arms, on Eastgate Street, and put up his plate. He completed the building modifications whilst waiting for his first clients to come to him, as at the time it was considered unprofessional for a veterinary surgeon to advertise, and the business soon flourished. By 2001, the main practice had outgrown the premises in the centre of Winchester, and a lease was obtained on a site adjacent to Scats in Eastern Lane, where John designed a new purpose-built surgery. By 2006, it was clear that health issues would prevent him continuing doing the job he loved, and so the small animal side of the practice and the name Mildmay Veterinary Surgery, Mildmay Veterinary Centre, was sold. A change of name to Mildmay Farm and Stud and a move to a small stud near Whitchurch signalled a start of a new venture, rehabilitating, breeding and owning racehorses. He is survived by his wife Bridget, children Pippa and Nick, and grandchildren Tom, Fiona and Lily.
Author Paul gives his take on Dunkirk. Fans of blockbuster movie Dunkirk will be able to get an insight into the real battle at a special lecture at the Museum of Army Flying on Monday. The recent movie on Dunkirk has attracted much comment on social media, so the illustrated talk by aviation historian, broadcaster and author Paul Beaver, entitled The Real Dunkirk, will examine why British troops were in France in 1940, who the personalities were, and what really happened. The Dunkirk evacuation, codenamed Operation Dynamo, and also known as the Miracle of Dunkirk, was the evacuation of Allied soldiers during World War II from the beaches and harbour of Dunkirk in the north of France between May the 26th and June the 4th, 1940. The operation commenced after large numbers of British, French and Belgian troops were cut off and surrounded by German troops during the Battle of France. Paul said, "This is not a direct critique of the movie, but rather a glimpse at the history of that amazing time in 1940, with the background context and the people highlighted." The scope of the talk will cover a number of areas, including why the British Expeditionary Force were in France, the French Army, and the Maginot Line, French, British and German generals, the politicians, and the invasion of France. Other topics will include Belgium and the Netherlands under attack, the counter-attack at Arras, the defence of Boulogne, the Royal Navy, the Royal Air Force, the little ships, and the myths and fantasy of Dunkirk. Tickets to the talk, which takes place at 7 p.m. on Monday, August the 21st, cost £10 each. A glass of wine or soft drink is included in the ticket price. The museum's Apache Cafe team will be serving a curry supper at 6 p.m. before the lecture for £7.50 per head. Tickets are available at the Museum of Army Flying reception by calling 01264 784 421. And the article has four photographs with it. There is one of a period photo from the beach at Dunkirk with British soldiers under air attack. A second one, rather grisly photo, of a corpse beside a roadblock in Calais by a jeep. A still from the movie Dunkirk of many men, soldiers, in one of the little boats being evacuated. And finally, a picture of the author Paul Beaver and his book Spitfire People.
Teaming up to help find missing people. An elderly dementia sufferer who fell in a ditch is one of the first people helped by a pioneering new partnership between firefighters and the police. She was rescued as part of a scheme which will see the Blue Light Service join forces to search for high-risk missing people. The 6 months pilot between Hampshire Fire and Rescue Service and Hampshire Constabulary will involve St Mary's Fire Station and cover the police operations across the whole of Southampton. The collaborative project is a UK first, and if successful, could be extended to include medium-risk missing persons and get rolled out across the county and beyond. Through the two control rooms, police will be able to deploy the services of firefighters to help find people who are at risk themselves or consider possible risk to others. As the details of the new initiative were being put together, two high-risk missing people were found by firefighters and police within minutes of the search being launched, including an elderly woman with dementia who had fallen into a ditch. The other was a semi-conscious woman in her 30s who was considered a suicide risk. St Mary's Station Manager Paul Parry said, "This is an exciting project for both emergency services and is set to be a great example of what Blue Light collaboration can achieve. By bringing together our combined skills, training and equipment, we can better protect the people of Hampshire." Sergeant Nick Mills said, "The benefits of being able to call upon extra people and resources to help in these circumstances could be crucial. As well as an extra manpower, firefighters will bring an array of skills and equipment that can make them ideally suited to the task. For both services, this partnership is win-win, and it will save lives." He said having firefighters available to search specific areas would free up officers to pursue other elements of the search operation. Firefighters have skills in rescuing from height as well as water and rope rescue and have equipment such as thermal imaging cameras and ladders, while there are also plans to use shared drone facilities. HFRS Director of the Blue Light Collaboration, Stu Adamson, welcomed the scheme, saying it was setting a bar for the rest of the country. And there is a picture of a fire engine and a police car, and in front of them are a police officer and two officers with dogs. They look like Springer Spaniels, a fireman, and it looks like a community police officer as well, all ready to step out and help us.
Marina buys fishery. A family-operated Hampshire marina has bought a 5-acre site to allow it to expand and create a new waterside leisure facility. John Wilmette Marine Limited, which owns and operates Universal Marina on the River Hamble at Salisbury Green, has acquired neighbouring Five Oaks trout fishery. The purchase was made with the aid of a seven-figure finance package from HSBC. The £1,475,000 finance facility will also allow Marina Firm to redevelop the Trout Lake and Clubhouse. It will offer fly fishing ashore and at sea, holistic spa therapies, dining, paddle boarding, kayaking, yoga, and model yacht racing. Avia Wilmette, Managing Director of John Wilmette Marine Limited, said, "We've had our sights set on the clubhouse and lake next door to the marina for a number of years, so we're delighted that with the support of HSBC, our hopes have become a reality. This latest project has a synergy with our work at the marina, allowing us to create a modern, sustainable environment for our guests. The new facilities will be available to existing Universal berth holders, tenants, customers, and the general public." Anthony Reed, HSBC's area director, said, "We've been working with John Wilmette Marine for the past 11 years, so we had a thorough understanding of the business and its objectives, meaning we were able to provide a tailored and cost-effective finance package when the opportunity to expand the marina arose. The funding has also led to the creation of a number of jobs for the local economy, which is something we're always keen to support." And there's a photograph of five of them: Richard Burlingham, Universal Marine; Nick Moss, Five Oaks Trout Fishery; Sudha Ankush, HSBC; Anthony Reed, HSBC; and Avia Wilmette, Universal Marina. Two of them armed with fishing rods, one of them armed with a keet net, all pictured standing on the grass in front of the lake.
Former choir master must face US child sex charges. An American living in Hampshire can be extradited to the US to face a catalogue of child sex charges, a judge has ruled. Roger Gies, 42, is accused of sex offences against a boy under 14 between 1998 and 2002 in California. District Judge Margot Coleman said she had thought a great deal about the case before ruling against him at Westminster Magistrates Court. The married former choirmaster, who has been living in Broughton under a different name, hugged his crying wife after the decision was given. Gies is wanted in Orange County, California, after allegedly befriending the child when working as a voice coach for the All-American Boys Chorus in 1998. Since 2014, a series of extradition legal battles have been fought after the Home Office certified a request from the United States. But High Court judges in London previously blocked his departure on human rights grounds, with lawyers questioning the trustworthiness of promises by US officials on his future treatment. While in England, he was working for a PR company, having been on the run from the FBI since 2007. The case has been referred to the Secretary of State to consider, and Gies has 14 days to appeal against the decision.
Tributes to Saxon, the four-legged firefighter. Tributes have been paid to a well-loved four-legged firefighter who has died. Saxon the Labrador spent more than 10 years as a fire dog with the Hampshire Fire and Rescue Service, helping to put 500 arsonists behind bars. However, the 11-year-old Labrador retired in March 2015 along with her sister Inca, 10, who both worked with the fire service for a total of 18 years. Fire investigator and dog handler Graham Howlett, who the dogs lived with, tweeted, "It's with great sadness today I had to have Saxon, Hampshire FRS first fire investigation dog, put to sleep. R.I.P. buddy, you will be missed. We have done jobs where the evidence they have found has been instrumental in getting a conviction. It's always nice to know that criminals wouldn't have been brought to justice without our work." Damien Watts, fire investigation station manager, added, "Combining the skills of experienced fire investigators with those of highly trained canine and handler has undoubtedly equipped Hampshire Fire and Rescue Service with a search team that speeds up the process of ignitable liquid detection, providing the much-needed evidence in the war against arson." Hampshire Fire and Rescue Service added that Saxon had such a strong sense of smell that if you put a single drop of petrol at one end of a football pitch, then he would be able to immediately smell it from the opposite end. One of Saxon's biggest achievements was when she was paired with Inca to investigate an incident in 2010 when petrol had been poured through a letterbox in Gosport before being set alight. The dog's sense of smell indicated the presence of ignitable fluid, which led to a successful conviction of David Regan, who was found guilty and jailed for threatening to endanger life. And there's two pictures. There's one of Saxon actually working in a burnt-out building, and there's another one with him with Graham Howlett, his trainer and owner. A lovely picture of a black Labrador, and there are four other fire officers with him.
Thank you, and that concludes the extracts for this week. So thank you to our editors, Margaret Boyden and Linda Vincent, and thanks to our copying, dispatch and memory stick preparation teams. And of course, thanks to our readers, Barbara Cairns.
Bye.
Albie Minns.
Bye.
And Norma York.
Goodbye.
And from me, Keith Vincent, goodbye, and do have an enjoyable week. When you've finished with this week's recording, please put the memory stick back in the wallet and return it as soon as possible, placing the address label inside the wallet. Thank you.